Welcome to the Australian CISO, a podcast for current and aspiring chief information security officers and anyone interested in cybersecurity. My name is Richard Herron. I am the host of the Australian CISO and proud to think there are listeners in 38 countries of the world. All opinions you hear on this podcast are my own or those of the people being interviewed. They do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the companies that I or the interviewees are employed by. The podcast is recorded with Audacity using a Rode Podcaster microphone and hosted on Podomatic. Hi everyone and welcome back to the Australian CISO podcast. You're listening to episode 44. Today you'll hear part 2 of the interview I did with Jason Morrell while we were both at an Adapt security event recently in Melbourne. Jason recently finished up with Aust Cyber where he was the group executive. Here's part 2 of our chat with Jason.
And this is diversity of thought and allowing that, you know, and I mentioned on stage though when we're here on the panel, untapped, you know, so it's diversity of not just gender, but diversity of thought, diversity of personality. So you've got to pick the person right for that role. And I think this is, again, where that professionalisation piece will help is that it'll give people more of a position. And I think when we were on the panel this morning, there was some people, you know, saying that were autistic that were doing the hacking, you know, and they were both 17 and 18. You know, and the, you know, that's a fact. And you've got to find people that have this diversity of thought, diversity of how they look at things. Mm. And I think teams become too much like the person who's the leader and they find people like that. You want that diversity, I think, on boards, on everything in life where you have the opposing view.
Yeah.
And actually, when I've tried to build groups, I try and get people that are definitely trying to have opposing views because, and as long as the other person's open to it, it opens up more possibility for everyone.
Look, unfortunately, I've been in a number of organisations and what I hear at conferences, unfortunately, the general theme or the general thinking seems to be that diversity is a room full of 50%, dare I say it, white females and 50% white males.
Yeah,
that's probably equality or fairness or whatever, but diversity covers, as you said, so many things. Age, like old guys like me, people with a physical disability, male, female, those who categorise themselves as non-binary, LGBTQI, people from this country, that country, and every other country, people of different religions. That is true diversity.
Yep.
It's not just a male-female thing that many people make it out to be.
Yep.
It's diversity is in so many things, and it's a diversity in thought as well. We had a leadership team a couple of jobs ago. There were 6 of us. 3 of us were reflectors who need to go away and think about things. The other 3 are very direct people. So if you said, what colour will we paint the walls here? The 3 direct people, blue, red, pink, whatever. And us 3 reflectors had to say, I need to go away and think about it. Now they say, what do you mean you need to think about it? And we'd say, well, what is it, matte or gloss finish? How many coats are we going to put? Are we going to do the ceiling as well? So, a bit of a weird example. All I'm saying is, there's different people.
Worthwhile. That's the thing, is it? And I think that's where you need the balance, you know, and you need actually people that see a bit broader. You know, like just as you say, to pick a colour, how many shades are in that colour? Yep. Well, when you say blue, what do you think of as blue? Are you thinking a dark blue? Are you thinking a sky blue? It's, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's got to be wound into that.
And if you pick everyone, like imagine a football team, so Richmond, your team, if you employed, what is it, 23 now? 23 or 24 Dusty Martins.
Not going to work.
No. If you pick Geelong, you pick 23 Gary Ablett's, junior or senior, 23 of them, it ain't going to work either. No. You've got to have different runners. You've got to have strong people. You need the ruckman, tall guys, small guys, fast guys.
And I listened to, actually it's funny, I was listening to Emma Murray, who was the mindset coach for Richmond and worked, she works with Oscar Piastri, who's the F1 driver. She worked with McLaughlin, who's in the, I think, the touring cars here in Australia, and also with the Richmond Football Club. And Dustin Martin always had this thought that he had to win it by himself. You know, and she said to change his mindset was if it's a team game. And she basically started working with them in 2016, which was their worst year. And then they won, was it 17, 19, 20, you know, sort of thing. But the thing is, it was more of a mindset shift than it was they didn't get any better players. It didn't change that. It was actually taking it off that individually and working as a team, as you say. Yeah. And I think all teams benefit from actually having that. Here's your role, here's what you do, and you get expert at that.
Yeah.
And I think this is something we could apply across the board, you know. And Emma Murray, if you actually get to listen to some of her talks, they're actually really interesting from that point of view. And I think as a CISO or as people at the top of the tree sometimes try and take on too much responsibility and too much stuff and try and hold stuff too tight.
Yeah.
You've got to sometimes trust in that team and actually pick people that you can trust in.
Absolutely.
To do the role. And we all make mistakes, and sometimes, unfortunately, in cyber that can have larger consequences, but you learn more from mistakes than you do from your success. Right. And hopefully they don't cost you too much when they happen.
Yeah,
but you've got to allow people to make mistakes and not try and just be perfect all the time.
Yeah, that is true. How would you advise a newcomer to cybersecurity to have a relatively successful career? Would it be, you know, lots of learning, have a mentor, lots of studying? What would you...
I think it's all those things. I think you should really be interested in it, because anytime you study anything, anyone that I've seen that's really good at anything has an interest in the topic and then wants to learn more than that.
Yeah.
So even if you go through here in a university or a TAFE or any sort of learning environment, don't just take what you learn in the books. Go and get online and be curious in that way. And
yeah,
that's why I think getting kids that muck around the internet and do gaming, I mean, you know, the Optus hack was a classic example. I think it was a teenage guy in Eastern Europe,
yeah,
just mucking around for APIs or whatever, you know. Turn that into good stuff. Was it the Frank Abagnale? Catch Me If You Can. He then ends up working for the FBI and the CIA
incredible.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's probably a challenge to turn all of them around, but you know, have something where you've got these curious kids that want to get in there and actually get engaged. I think what's happening at the moment, unfortunately, is a lot of people going, I'm going to pick cybersecurity for a career because it pays good money or it's interesting and it's that. So they'll do it, and as you touched on before, Rich, they'll do anything to pass the exam. And they'll learn the exam and pass the exam and have the certificate, but do they have the skill that sits behind that?
And do they have the passion to do the cybersecurity?
Yeah.
It might be quite a well-paid job.
Mm.
I wouldn't know, but
no.
It may well be a well-paid job. But so is probably a hitman. I have no desire to be a hitman.
But you've got to want to do it.
You've
I think any career.
It.
Look, anyone who does well, and I think that, and I don't know in all facets of life, but you know, find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. They sort of say that, but and it's not that cybersecurity doesn't come without its risk and challenges and all that sort of stuff, but if you're curious and get off on that fact of actually trying to work in the mind of someone else and how do you protect things and how can you make things work and actually have that genuine curiosity, it's almost like a detective in some ways.
Yeah.
And but also I think we should see ourselves as being not too dissimilar to nurses and doctors and police officers and all that stuff. We're trying to protect our people and the public in general from bad things happening.
Interesting you should say that, because here's something for you. I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I put a little small survey on my Australian CISO LinkedIn group recently. There's a lot of talk about stress in the cyber industry, but without leading the witness too much, I'm sort of thinking everyone's stressed, I reckon, post...
I think it's life, too.
Yeah,
I think it's life. The thing is... And look,
is it a special thing? Is it just cyber people feeling stressed?
Sorry, no, I think cyber people do feel stressed, and it is a stressful job in some ways. But then also the flip side is, I think people get a genuine enjoyment and fulfillment out of it. So it depends on the person.
Yeah.
I think the best analogy I ever heard of that was, it was actually, and this is a true story that I did see the recording of, from it was like a seminar, and one guy had sort of stood up and he was saying why his life wasn't great.
Yep.
He actually said, I was in Vietnam War, I saw atrocities, the smell of burning flesh, seeing, and he'd gone through this sort of thing, and he mentioned the battalion he was in Vietnam. Lo and behold, on the other side of the room, completely other side, a guy goes, were you in battalion, did you have this guy as a leader? His life was completely opposite. This guy's marriage had been ruined, he didn't have a relationship with the kids, he'd been alcoholic, all that stuff. The other guy goes, I had the reverse, because from seeing the atrocity there, I then looked at life and said, I've got to grab life by the scruff of the neck. I've got the best relationships. I work hard at my job.
Wow.
I take every day like I'm so lucky that I wasn't one of the guys that got killed there.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he said, my life, nothing could be as hard as there. So whenever I've had a challenge in life, it's like, well, it's not as hard as when I was in Vietnam. So you're looking at the perspective of two people in the same situation and actually looking through a different lens. And I think in cybersecurity or anything in life, I think we do have a lens that we look through at things and say, is it stressful or should I just be thankful? I'm thankful for all the stuff I've been through.
Yeah.
At the time, I would, if someone told me I had to go through the stuff I'd had to go through to do things I've had to do in life, I probably wouldn't take that challenge or wouldn't start. But in hindsight, when you look back, it's what makes people, you know, so we should be thankful in some ways. And I know there is challenges, but we've got to support people. So if people do see things in a different way, and not just in cybersecurity, but generally across the populace, seeing the girls and how you can't leave school at school anymore. When we were kids, you go home. If someone called you on the landline, you could even let that go through an answering machine, right? No one could touch you. These days, people are direct messaging people, posting stuff all the time. You know, it's you can constantly, the girls I saw when they grew up, they were never disconnected from life. At night, they're scrolling through their phone. Everyone's constantly getting, you know, dopamine hits and stress coming out of them all the time.
That's the problem I see with being a cyber, I'll say cyber manager. You've got this mobile phone in front of you. You're hearing about Optus, Medibank, Latitude, all these breaches, and you're almost living in fear that you're going to be the next target. And then, if you're not the next target, you've got to read about the Medibank breach, the Latitude breach. What happened? Geez, I hope we're not, you know, got those vulnerabilities and all that sort of stuff.
And then what's the next vulnerability? And when does quantum come on there? And what else is generative AI going to do?
It's not easy.
We used to have to worry about lions eating us, and now, you know, we've constantly got this, we're getting pumped with all this other stuff. So I think the stress for people, and just general living, the cost of living, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses for the average person, and so talking just in life in general, but also at our workplace, you know, we always, how do we get protected? It's such a fast-moving feast. Cybersecurity moves like nothing else. Yeah.
Well, quite often we've gone through so much hard work to justify a budget to get this endpoint protection and this network detection response capability and all that. But you know you've got to keep up, I was going to say with the Joneses, but you've got to keep up with the cybercrims and you've got to go back to your board and ask for more money. What do you mean? We gave you the money. That's solved. No, it's a continual battle, board. We need money every year to keep our head above the water. And I think that's a bit stressful as well, especially when they say do more with less.
It does take, sometimes, Richard, that's the thing. It takes a cyber attack then to make it that someone goes, oh, that's happened in our area. You can bet your ass that in none of those areas, whether it's telecommunications or finance or in medical now, that those people go, that was close. Could we have been the same? Yes, here's some money.
Well, what's interesting, we heard today at the Security Edge, sponsored by Adapt, a quote, something about the Medibank data breach cost $45 million and there's another $45 million that they need to pay or whatever it was. It was a lot of money.
Medibank's $250 that they were told to put aside for remediation, which I think they'd already budgeted to say $145. Yep. I think Latitude was $105 loss, and at least half of that was going to be for remediating the thing. But then we've got the class actions that come behind these as well. There's going to be lawyers lining up with class actions against these. And insurance, in many cases, won't cover these. And there's been, you know, and I think a lot of people had sort of relied, oh, we've always got insurance, you know.
That doesn't help you with your reputation,
It doesn't, and that's the reputational damage. But I was actually surprised that looking at all those three that, and you look at the share price even, how quickly the share price bounced back. And even for Optus, who I thought would have nibbled into their market share, and Telstra did sort of jump on and sort of say, oh, Telstra are a lot safer and here's our offering. I don't know how much of a market shift. I don't know if the market shift was as great as what people expected. Yeah.
Well, I did a big study years ago into the Target US breach of November, December 2013, and it didn't take long for the share price to come back as normal. Yeah. Here's a question, and we'll never know the answer, but you wonder whether the Medibanks and Optuses of the world, if they'd spent like $20 million, could have that even prevented the breach happening in the first place? We'll never know.
No, and this is the thing. I don't think there is any perfection in cybersecurity. This is the other issue, is that we all, in hindsight, we're all wiser, right? And then looking at something happening to someone else, we go, oh, that wouldn't have happened to us.
Oh, no, of course
not. Or you'll get the vendor going, we had the silver bullet, we could have fixed that. And I think it's one of the things is the ambulance chasing afterwards, where I'd hate to be a CISO at one of those organisations that would get peppered by all these. If you'd went with us, that wouldn't have happened. We saw that months ago, and, you know, that happens, right? That's not helpful either, you know. Yeah. So, and as I said on stage today when we were talking about it, like a bushfire, like a flood, can we not just look at these things to get for the greater good? You know, we do the bushfires and say, let's cut the branches back from the power lines and you know, the levee got breached here, so let's build a better wall here so that next time, we know how high the floods go, we've seen it before, build it higher or build it this level or build it there. But with cyber, these incidents happen, we need to collectively go as a group to learn and share the learnings. Mm. On the other side of the fence, and I do hop on the dark web a bit and have a look on there, they're always working together to work stuff. This work, try this. Yeah. I'll sell you this kit, you know, buy this sort of thing, or here's how you do it, and try your email this way. And generative AI for phishing emails must be a dream.
Yeah, look, that flood and fire analogy is really good. I enjoyed that today. Here's a question. If you think about the way cyber crims get in, they use some telecommunications line to get from, I don't know, North Korea, Iran, Russia, China.
Whatever it is,
to Australia. Mm. If that's the case, and that communication link is coming into Australia, sounds really basic, but surely there can be some, and I know Telstra were doing this clean pipes initiative, surely there can be some controls over that pipe or pipes that are coming into Australia, or is that too simple?
Well, I think, and I can only be guided by what you hear from the likes of Telstra and stuff with how much they are stocking. Yep. And this goes back to Dennis Iso. If Telstra, the biggest telco who controls all that, can't stop it, then what hope do we have at the other end? And it only takes someone to sneak through on a back door or something. Like, if you say, we're closing down all Russian, China, you know, like IP addresses and piggyback on the American one and come through, you know. I don't think there's any perfect way of fixing that with the way it is at the moment. And I don't think we should be laying blame. I think everyone's I think everyone needs to be going, how do we all collectively try and make things better?
Yeah.
And there needs to be layers. If they get past that wall, but we need another wall behind that, and then we need another wall behind that. I think sometimes we rely too much on one wall say, well, if that'll stop it. But what if it doesn't? We don't have the sort of backup support.
You've
got
to have the defence in depth. I went to a lunch before and people were talking about phishing and what they did. And I didn't comment because if I start talking, I'll go for 3 hours.
Yep.
But it really has to go to... All these things have to be a defence in depth.
Yep.
If the front door lock fails, well, then there's the next guard door. Then there's the guard dog. Then there's the camera. There's got to be defence in depth. Now, listeners might have heard a number of bells going, which means the next session is going. I've got two more quick questions for you. One, they say that, there's this big undersupply of cyber people. Mm-hmm. Is that true, do you think?
It is, yeah. I mean, when Atos Cyber, we did the last sector competitiveness plan last year, which came out in November for 22, and they were saying 3,000 jobs. And as mentioned on stage two today, the problem was with those numbers is that we did those prior to the Optus attack.
Uh-huh.
And then if you think over the last 12 months, if it was 3,000 by 26, now more people are looking for more cyber professionals, you can bump that number up. And obviously, to be quick, we've got a few issues here. We haven't got the pipeline, or we've got too much new talent.
Yep.
We don't have that mid-market, or we have the high-end people. Yep. We can't bring people into the country to fill the breach because there's visa issues in bringing people in. It's hard to get people across from other industries to get them in, which we should be cross-skilling. So people have already been in the business environment.
Yep.
Part of the skill issue we have, Richard, when they come out of learning cyber as young people, they don't understand business.
Yes.
So, you know, they don't understand what effect is that going to have on a business, or how does the business operate, you know. So it's a multifaceted thing that we're having issue with, but we need to attack it from multiple angles.
And that's an education thing as well. Some people at my work and previous works have asked me some technical question, I don't know, cross-site scripting or SQL injection. I say, I don't know, I'm a CISO.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you should know. It's a technical thing. I said, CISO is a business role. You really need to appreciate the whole business and all the risks and all that. But that's a discussion for another day. One last question for you, dear sir. Actually, one observation about the demand and supply of cyber people, there seems to be a very big appetite for more CISO roles, but companies aren't doing that. Do you think that's because of the money or because they just think, why do we want to call you a CISO?
I don't think they understand the CISO role. And the other thing is most CISOs have developed from, I mean, you look at Ben Doyle, someone we know well. Yeah, he's been TELUS 20 years, right?
Yep.
He wasn't a CISO when he started, but he's morphed into that role. Yes. A lot of people have become CISOs and they're duly right to be that role. But it's sort of a role that has sort of developed around them. And now people are going, now I'm going to develop myself to be a CISO because I know what a CISO is.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't the case back in the day.
One last question. You've had a number of diverse, interesting careers. What do you think you'll be doing in 10 years' time? Still in cyber in some capacity?
That's a great question. I'd love to be. If I'm needed, I've always had the thing, I'd love to not be needed to be in cyber. Yeah. You know, that's the panacea is to say that cyber sort of, find something that looks after itself or covers that. I want it to become as obsolete as the fax machine, that we don't need to be cyber. You know, there's really minimal or no need for fax machines. I'd like to make myself obsolete.
Yeah.
You sort of want to put yourself out of a job, ideally, because that would be the panacea. Unfortunately, then, the flip side of that is looking at it, I don't see this problem going away in the short to medium term.
No.
But let's hope that, you know, with things like AI and other things coming on board that it might change for the positive, we've got to look at how we can use those things to make things better rather than going, this is the worst thing ever, AI is going to kill us all.
Thinking negatively, I'm thinking, you know, the cyber criminals who will use AI for bad, we'll use it for good, but they'll use it for bad. And so we're still fighting this never-ending
battle. We're always going to have that issue, aren't we? And crime is going to be crime no matter what. And a lot of the people who used to move drugs and other things are like, that's hard work.
Yes.
Shipping it from Colombia or wherever else to other parts of the world.
Yes.
Get a cyber criminal.
Yeah, so that's right.
It's a far better business.
You can be sitting in a basement in, Kiev or whatever, eating your hamburger, hacking into places, getting ransomware. Yeah.
Well, you think about that, and I always think about that because it was the first one that happened to us at to start Cyberware, when it new domain. Those guys made $782,000 Australian in West Africa in 3 weeks worth of work. Now think in that part of the world what that would have been worth back in 2017.
That's not bad money if you can get it.
You don't need too many of those.
No. All right, my friend, we better call it a day. Thank you so much. I think with this episode, we'll split it up over two or three.
Maybe five.
So not only will you get 15 minutes of phone.
My job career.
You'll probably get 15 minutes of phone spread over a month, which is over four different weeks, which is good. But thank you very much. Have you got any last parting words?
Look, I think I'm looking forward that we're sitting here today. It's almost halfway through October. The cyber strategy comes out at the end of the month. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I know there's a few people sort of sitting on their hands waiting to see what happens there, but hopefully this is a piece of work we can collectively work toward. I know it's a big statement to say by 2030 being number one, but sometimes, you know, it's better to aim at something in life.
Yes.
I think most people aim at nothing in life and hit it with tremendous accuracy.
Yeah.
I think having a goal as audacious or as big as that is something that we should aspire to. You're better off aiming for that and finishing top five or something rather than not aiming for that.
I've got to say, being an ex-archer, if you aim for your target, you will hit it eventually.
That's right.
So whether it's 2030 or a bit later than that, hopefully we'll get there, but I think as humans, we're pretty hopeless at predicting things.
Yeah.
If we're good at predicting things, we would have won the $80 million in Powerball a couple of weeks.
Maybe we can use AI for that.
Now, that would be good.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, I've got to go. We'll shake hands.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
and we'll meet again.
We will.
Don't know where.
Don't know when.
See you, Jason.
See you, mate.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, that wraps up the two-part episode with Jason Morrell. Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Australian CISO. Have a great week. Before you know it, Christmas will be here. Talk soon. Bye.